Well, good morning again, guys. So thrilled to be able to kind of make some announcements to you a little bit, and wanted to wait at this point in the service so we could record it and get it out to everyone who listens and watches online. Last week, we were talking about having one of our student pastor candidates in for their final interviews, and they were over in the student center, and I am happy and thrilled to announce that Brad and Shelley Medford have accepted, and they'll be coming here to be our next student pastors. You're going to love these guys. They are just an amazing, amazing couple. And more importantly, your students are really going to get a lot out of Brad. I do know that their church is sad to see them go. Just to let you guys know, we did poach them away. But we're thrilled. I've worked with Brad before, and I'm just happy beyond all things to have him. So he'll be moving here just in a few weeks, and will be with us either the last Sunday of this month, or he'll be with us the first Sunday of next month as we kind of work out the details of that. So again, just want to bring you up to date on what we're doing around here at Next Level. I think that is amazing. So glad that you're here. We're going to kick off a new series, and this series is going to take us through Labor Day into the start of when we're going to do Back to Church Sunday. It's National Go Back to Church Sunday on September 17th, to which we told you we're going to invite 100,000 of our neighbors to be here. So if you want to join us in on that, it's going to be a great day. But this series is going to take us from now till then. For the next 5 weeks, we're going to talk a little bit about identity. And the reason we're going to talk about it is because so much of who we are and how we see ourselves is wrapped up in the things that we think about and things that we're involved in. And sometimes those things rise up to the level that they're in front of God and they become an idol. So we're going to call this series American Idols. And as I was thinking about identities, though, I was thinking, when is the time that we kind of go through some of our biggest identity crisis? And it, for me, I don't know about what it was for you. Me, it was kind of middle school through high school, kind of in that area. I'm still trying to figure out who I was. And as I was writing down my notes to tell you some stories of some of the crises I went through, I noticed a theme that I can define all the different identities and things that I went through by shoes. That there was a different set of shoes that I wore with different identities, which my wife, if you know about, I have like a shoe fetish. I have more shoes than my wife does, by far. And she says, well, it's no kidding that you would define your things by shoes. So let me walk you through my life, and then we're going to talk a little bit about your life. So in eighth grade, when I was in eighth grade, country music and the whole country music scene was starting to take place, and everybody was all into country music. I really didn't like country music at the time. It was not my thing, but I wanted to fit in, and I kind of went to a bit of a redneck school. And so I told my mom, I said, I want to have some Chugga boots. And so I went to go get Chugga boots, and I know you're a little confused because you're like, what? Because my wife says the same thing. What are Chugga boots? How many of you, before I even put a picture up, know what I'm talking about when I say Chugga boots? There were about six in the first service. One, two, three. Four here. All right, so not very common. But when I put the picture up, you're going to go, oh, yeah, and you're going to have some name for them. So all the country boy, good old boys in my school, they wore these shoes, and so my mom went and got them. So in eighth grade, this is how I defined myself, by this pair of shoes, right, and a flannel shirt. So I haven't gone far from, you know, at least the shirt side of things. You know, I'm into plaid and flannel and stuff. So that was eighth grade for me, and I pretended like I like country music. Then when I came rolling into ninth grade, and again, these aren't really hard and fast. It's not like my identity changed over summer. It kind of blurs a little in there. But I went through this phase where I wanted to be a rapper, and MC Hammer was my man. And those of you that know, I was just a huge Digital Underground fan, and you know, and so I defined myself with MC Hammer pants. Remember those? So I had Hammer pants, and I had Adidas shoes. Adidas shoes were in, and so ninth grade, it was all about the Adidas, right? And so I'm walking around, man. I thought I was Run DMC, and everything was all cool, right? And so then in 10th grade, roughly sometime during that time, I was having a bit of an identity crisis again. And so I kind of shifted over and I discovered this thing called the Rocky Horror Picture Show. How many of you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, looky there. And so we started going to the Rocky Horror Picture Show. So I started wearing guy liner. This is crazy. And I had Doc Martens, right? Right? Doc Martens? Yeah, we got the Doc Martens out there. So 10th grade was Doc. And if you made fun of me, those things had steel toes, I would kick you. And it would hurt. All right, so that was like 10th grade, you know, and I'm doing all that. Then I had like a major shift. I kind of went from there into 11th grade. I thought I was Axl Rose or something. And started defining myself by the rock and roll scene. So I'd have jeans with all the cut-up stuff, and then you would take bandanas. You remember that? And you would tie them around your legs, and you'd wear them on your wrists and your forehead. And I wore Air Jordans, 11th grade, was all about the Air Jordans, man, and that was awesome for me. And then my senior year, I discovered this amazing show called Miami Vice. And I said, man, this is it. And so Miami Vice, I had different colored t-shirts. I literally had a white sports jacket that I would wear, and I had all the polos, and I would flip my collar up. You guys know what I'm talking about? Flipping the... And the shoes were penny loafers with no socks. Except I was too good for penny loafers. I put dimes. I had dime loafers, right? And so 12th grade, this was me, you know, some sort of modified Miami Vice prep. I didn't know who I was. And you look at that and you go, our pastor's crazy. He just doesn't know who he is. And I went through and I rolled through all these things. And I guess one of the neat things was, as a kid, I was able to relate to a whole lot of people, you know, going through high school. And I kind of went in and out of all of these different groups. And I know when you were in high school, maybe you didn't go through the same phase and you can't define what you did by shoes. And God help you, I hope you didn't wear MC Hammer pants either. And, you know, but you had something when you were in school that you were known for. And maybe you were the athletic type, and you were known as the athlete, and you were known as the jock. Because, oh, yeah, they're really good at sports, and she's really good at sports, and so she's the athlete. Or maybe you were the smart kid, right? And you were always the smart kid, and you were the one that always, you know, ruined the curve for the rest of the class, and everybody hated you because they all got 60s, and you got a 99. You're like, dude! You know, so you were just known, like, when you showed up in the class, everybody went, ah! You know, maybe that was you. Maybe you were a band geek. Right? And you did all the band geek stuff and all that was there. Maybe you just were a geek. You weren't even good enough to be a band geek. You were just geek. Right? Maybe you were a theater person. You know, I always loved them. They come by, I'm a theater. And I said, you're a theater. No, I'm a thespian. I said, I didn't want to hear about your sexual orientation. I just, you know? Whatever it was, this is what you were known for. This was your identity, right? And good kid, bad kid, all kinds of things. You fast forward, and you become an adult, and there's still things that you're known for. You still have an identity. When people think of you, there still are things that they would say about you. And like it or not, you're known for something. That when someone begins to describe you, there's a category, a thing, maybe you're still the athlete. Yeah, they're really athletic, man, that you see. They run like, you know, it's all over. Man, I can't even keep up with their Instagram feed from CrossFitting so much. I mean, that's just them. Right? Or maybe you're that family, the good family. You know, they're the family. They're always smiling. They've always got it together, you know. Or you're that guy that's successful and you have money, maybe not a lot of money, but you got enough money, you know, and you're known as that guy. You know, he's just successful. I wish I could go on the vacations I have. I wish I could, you know, drive the cars that they drive. You know, it's just what they're known for. Or maybe what you're known for, those are all kind of a little bit positive. Maybe you're known for some things that aren't so positive. You know, you're that person that always screws things up. You know, you don't want them on the team. You put them on the team and everything is just going to go awry. You know, you're known as the person that just can't keep a relationship. You know, they just can't stay in a relationship. They get in a relationship, they're going to mess that relationship up. Or maybe they're just the person, you know, that just, you know, they're selfish. Everything's about them. Everything's about them. Or maybe you're just known as the person who's late. They're always late. So no matter where, you know, and you're the person that they tell you to be there at 6:50, and you're always, why do you always tell me 10 minutes, you know, before everybody else gets here? Because you're always late, you know. You're that person. You're known for something, and that's the reality. We are all known by other people for something. But what I want to spend a lot of time on here is you yourself. You know yourself as something as well. And sometimes we don't think about what we have as our own core identities and how we think about ourselves. And we don't like to get introspective, you know, and you know, I don't want to turn this into a Dr. Phil show. We're not going to have him up and bring you up on stage and talk about how you're at and ask you, how's that working for you? And you say, not so well. And he said, yeah, you're an idiot. You know, we're not going to do that. But you're known for something. There's an identity that you have. And the reason that we're going to talk about this, the reason that we're going to spend 5 weeks going over this, is because this is critical to what it means to be a follower of Jesus. What we're going to talk about in your identity is definitely a spiritual issue. And the reason that it's a spiritual issue is because the thing that you worship and your identity, they come from the same place. Worship and identity come from the same place. And so my identity and my worship all come from the same place. And if my identity and my worship come from the same place, I really should know who I am. I should really think about what my core identity is, and I should think about the things that I worship. Because if we're honest here, most of us in this room, there are things that compete with God on a regular basis. And if we went around the room and we were honest, I would say there's many of us in here that God is no longer first place in our life. And we wonder why our identity is kind of out of whack. It's because some of the things that we've allowed into our lives are pushing our identity to be out of whack. And the good news is, this whole struggle of trying to find out who I am and my identity, we're not the first ones in the world to have this. Paul wrote a letter to a group of people called the Ephesians. Pastor Joseph spent just a couple of weeks going through talking about, from the book of Ephesians, chapter 4, about this idea of how much God loves you. Because what Paul is writing in Ephesians is to a group of people who had kind of wandered off. He's writing from prison to a church, a group of people that he founded, and they're starting to drift, and things are starting to get a little wonky. And he's like, look, I want you to understand a few things. And one of the things that he's really drilling in on is, I want you to understand how God sees you and what God wants for you. And so he begins to walk this through. And what I want to do is, I want to start off our series and go right into that chapter 4, come in a little bit where Joseph was at, and then go past it to get into what Paul says about this idea of, what does it mean to be who I am, and what does it mean to worship? What is actual worship? So Ephesians chapter 4, verse 17, we'll jump in. Paul says this: so I tell you this, and I love his next words, I tell you this and insist on it. He's pretty solid here, right? I'm not just going to ask you to do something. I am telling you, I am going to insist. What is it that he insists? That you must no longer live as the Gentiles do in the futility of their thinking. Now, we're going to come back to that last phrase, the futility of their thinking. But he says, I don't want you to live as the Gentiles do. And if you're new to the New Testament, new to reading the Bible, there's two groups of people in the New Testament. There is the Jews, the children of Israel, who, you know, are born an Israelite, born into Judaism. And then there's everybody else, and everybody else were the Gentiles. And so Paul is writing, he's writing to this group of Christians. Look, I don't want you to live like all these other people do. And in Ephesus, around them, there were many people who knew some things about Jesus. They had heard the stories about this guy, this rabbi that created a lot of chaos down there. They had heard the story that, yeah, somewhere down the line said that he had died and he raised himself from the dead. You know, they had heard about this Jesus, but they didn't really know Jesus. Not like the church that Paul was writing to. Like, you guys know, but you're around a bunch of people who don't know Jesus. Not a lot different than where we live today. We have a lot of people where we live, especially growing up and living here in the South. If you didn't grow up in the South, you're in the South now. We all know Jesus. We all know the stories of Jesus. Many of us have grown up in churches and heard all the Sunday school stories. We can tell you things about Jesus, but we don't know Jesus. And actually, the statistics bear this out. There was a big nationwide survey that was done in 2015, and in it, they defined a true Christian, a follower of Jesus, as someone who took the principles and the teachings of Jesus and applied them and lived them out in their everyday life. Every single day, they were living out the teachings of Jesus. So yes, they believed in Jesus as God and all these other things, but more importantly, they lived out the teachings of Jesus in their everyday life. And it's like, this is our definition of what it means to be a Christian. And what they found here in the South, where we live, in the middle of the Bible Belt, 76% of the population don't know Jesus. 76%. And you say, well, Clay, how's that? I mean, they're in churches. I get it. Not everybody in a church is a follower of Jesus. Not everybody in a church lives out the teachings of Jesus in everyday life. And most people that you encounter who say they go to church, they go to church. They are what we call, in my business, that we call them creasters. Anybody know what a creaster is? Maybe you used to be one. A creaster is someone who comes Christmas and Easter only. You're a creaster. Sometimes we call them CEOs. right? You're a CEO. You come Christmas, Easter only. And if you were to come up and ask most people here, hey, do you go to church? Yeah, I go to church. What church do you go to? They give you a name of church. When's the last time that you went? Not too long ago. Easter. When you plan on going back? I don't know. Christmas? And that's most people. And I'm not saying that to belittle. Trust me, I'm not. I've got friends that aren't followers of Jesus yet. They haven't quite got there. They're wonderful people, but they don't know Jesus. Not like I know Jesus. They're not living out the teachings of Jesus. And so 76% of the people that are in our community that are all around us, they don't know Jesus. And what Paul was telling the Ephesians is something he would say to us. He'd say, be careful. Because you're surrounded by people that don't know Jesus. You're surrounded by people that their grid and how they think about life and what they do in life does not include, and we should follow the teachings of Jesus. So be careful, because the way they think and the way they act, it can seep into how you think about yourself and what you go about. Be careful. He says, so let me tell you this. Let's look at that verse again. Insist on it, that you must no longer live as the Gentiles do in the futility of their thinking. And again, we're not berating people who don't know Jesus. It's just that their thinking, when it comes to having life, as Jesus said, life and life to the full and abundant life and thriving in life, it's futile. And what does it mean here when you say futility? It just is pointless. It's useless. When it comes to really living, Paul is saying, the way they think is just kind of useless. It's not going to get there. It's pointless in trying to get there. And so, you know, they want to be a certain way, but they can't because their thinking doesn't take them there. And so why is it that our thinking is so important to us? And he talks about the futility of thinking. Why is it so important? Because let's define identity. Identity is what I think about myself. That if I want to talk about my identity, it's what I think about myself. So thinking is very, very, very important. My identity is what I really think about myself. And Paul says, look, the Gentiles, what they are thinking about and how they think about themselves, not that they don't think great things about themselves, it's just never going to lead anywhere. It's kind of a false sense of who they are. It's useless. It's pointless. We can spot this in other people a mile away when they think something about themselves, and man, that's just never going to lead anywhere because it's not true, right? In the heyday of American Idol, why did we watch the first 2 or 3 weeks of American Idol? To watch people who were futile in their thinking, who thought they were singers, get on the stage and make a fool of themselves. Now, they always videoed them ahead of time. Oh, I'm an excellent singer, and I sing all the time, and I sing for this, and I sing for church. That always made me cringe because I'm like, oh, God, help that church. And I sing, you know, and I sing in the shower, and my mama says that I'm an excellent singer. Mama says everybody sings good. And they get up, and they make an embarrassment of themselves, right? And my thought and your thought is always, do you not have any friends? Somewhere along the line it said, hey, you sing kind of okay. Please do not go on national TV and sing. You're going to embarrass yourself, right? But they were futile in their thinking. They had a warped view of their thinking. They thought, well, I can sing. Well, you can't. And we can spot that externally with people all the time, can't we? It's like, ooh, yeah, that person thinks that they're a good designer, and then you see what they do. It's like, oh, I'm such a great artist. And they draw something, and you go, next, not quite. Right? We do this all the time, and it's easy to see it externally in others. It is far more difficult, though, to understand what's going on the inside of us. It's hard to see who we really are and what's flawed in our thinking when it comes to what's going on inside of us. Because sometimes our thinking is not helpful. Sometimes what we think about ourselves is useless and pointless and will never lead us to life. You know, I meet people, and what I find out in doing some talking is one of the deep core identities that they think about themselves is that I'm a failure. And the way they process that is that didn't work out, and that didn't work out, and that didn't work. So I'm a failure, and everything that I touch, I'm just going to fail out. I failed at a marriage. I failed at being a husband. I failed at being a dad. I failed at business. I'm a failure, right? And that kind of thinking will never lead to life. It'll never lead to life and life to the full. It is futile. It is pointless in going down that road. It can be just negative. I'm never going to amount to anything, you know? I'm not happy, and I'm never going to be happy. You know, I've tried the happiness thing, and the happy thing's not going to work out. Or we have a thought that I've just got something to prove. And the thing that we think most about ourselves is, I got to prove this, and I got to prove that. And so if I can just accomplish whatever, and you fill in the blank, then I will have proved myself. Or I got to be a success. And if I can just be successful in business or successful at home and successful in my bank account, then I will be somewhere. And so we have all of these things that internally begin to define who we are, because that's how the world defines who they are. And Paul says, don't do that. Don't do that. That is futile in your thinking. You see, this is where all our jacked up identities come from. This is where things get messed up, is because we get off and we get so focused and so centered on something that is not true that it begins to warp our own self-identity. This is what Paul begins to say about these false identities as we continue on. So he says, you know, don't be like the Gentiles. They are darkened in their understanding and separated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to the hardening of their hearts. We'll come back to that. Having lost all sensitivity, they've given themselves over to sensuality so as to indulge in every kind of impurity, and they are full of greed. Paul's saying the reason that our identities and the reason that our the way we think about ourselves gets hijacked is because we indulge in the wrong things. To indulge means that you focus on something. You focus in on something, that you just consume it over and over, that you indulge in doing it. And he says the reason the Gentiles have futility in their thinking is they have indulged in sensuality. Now, we can go to sensuality, and you could immediately go to all the sexual things, and I'm sure you've heard many Bible verses or sermons that talk about it. Sensuality basically just means that you have a hole and a void in your life, and so there's some sensing presence. You need a sense of something to fill that void, and so you move towards something, and it fills that hole and that void, and that is the sensuality that you begin to crave. And Paul says, look, not only do they go after it, but they are greedy. What does it mean to be greedy? I want more, I want more, I want more, I want more. And in the context of what he's saying is they get so wrapped up in having all of these things and needing that they just want more. I want more. I want a bigger house. I want a better house. I want a better car. I want a better job. I want more money. I want, you know, better kids. No one ever wants more kids, so okay, I want less kids. And you just, true. And you just more and more and more. Paul says, this is what's wrong. And their hearts have been hardened. In other words, they can't see the truth anymore. They're so wrapped up in filling the voids and the holes in their life with all of these things and all these false identities that their hearts have now become hard and they can't see the truth of what is going on. They're worshiping the wrong things. And so I think at this point, we kind of need to define, before we move any further, what is it we mean when we say worship? Because you keep saying they worship the wrong things, they worship the wrong things. Because I don't think we all have a clear understanding of what worship is. Because we kind of see worship and we say, well, you know, worship is that thing where we sing and we stand on stage. Let me give you a definition of worship. Worship is focusing on what matters most to us. That's all it is. Worship is focusing on what matters most to me. So whatever matters most to me, and I turn my attention to it, and I focus in on it, I am worshiping that thing. So that's why when we say, hey, we want you to be able to worship God, what we're saying is elevate God to a place in your life that he matters most, who he is, what he is about, that when he matters most, and you're thinking on those things, and you're acting on those things, you are actually in an act of worship. And so sometimes we worship the wrong things, careers, relationships. You say, well, Clay, how do I know actually what I'm worshiping? I kind of ask myself, how can I talk to you to give you a definition? Because nobody knows that their life is out of whack here, because if you really suspected it was out of whack, you would do something about it. So how can you know? What are some things? And I came down to this, that there's kind of four core areas of your life. And what I would say to that is when you think about these four core areas and you think, what do I think about and how do I spend my money in these areas? it'll begin to tell you what it is that you worship. And these four areas are this: your free time, your finances, your thoughts, and your desires. Wherever you focus your time and attention and everything in those areas, that is what you worship. That is where you're at. So, you know, when you're sitting and thinking about your free time and you know, whatever it is that pops in, whatever recreational thing, and that's all you can think, and it just consumes, and everything that you do, that's an indicator. Where you're spending your money is an indicator. Where your desires, this whatever's in you that says, oh, I want this, and I want this, and I want this, and I want that, these are all indicators. And I get it's ugly because you don't want to go down there, because if you go like I do, I realize, man, I've got a lot of false idols in my life. But this is true. And this is what Paul is speaking to. This is what the Ephesians are doing. He says, look, don't live like them. This is what they've allowed to happen in our life. They've taken their attention off. They're starting to focus on all these things, trying to fill up all these holes in their life. It's futile. It's pointless. It's useless. It's never going to lead to life. So, how do you get there? I mean, if we ended the message there, it'd be pretty depressing. Paul says, look, let me move on and let me show you what we can do in order to answer that question. Verse 20. It says, however, all the stuff he taught before is not the way of life that you've learned. When you heard about Christ and were taught in him accordance with the truth that is in Jesus, you were taught with regard to your former way of life to put off your old self. In other words, all that thinking and all that stuff, set it aside, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires. So all these things that you want to do, you need to understand that it's deceitful, it's wrong, it's never going to lead you to where you want to go. You put it off, and then here's the hope: to be made new in the attitude of your minds, and to put on the new self, created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. Paul says, look, you got to let go of that old mind. Because it's going to lead you to some places that are corrupt and deceitful. And it's going to take you down some categories that you never meant to go. And the reason that it's deceitful is because it happens subtly over time. The idols that you have in your life, the idols that I have in my life, they didn't just prop up there and become what they are overnight. They seeped in. You know, they come in with things like, I just want my family. I just want to be able to be successful so my family lives well. And while that's a good goal, the next thing you know, you're just completely focused in on work. You're completely focused in on the next deal and making this money. And time at home just begins to slip away. And the distance between you and your wife begins to grow and grow. But hey, you're advancing in your career. Hey, you're making money. The whole time you're telling yourself, I'm just doing this for the family. I'm just doing this for the family. Just do it. How many times have we heard that story? And what gets dissolved and what goes away and what ends in divorce? The family. Because something slipped its way in. And it's deceitful. I've seen families get busted up over good things. They say, hey, we just want the best things for our kids. And I get it. I want the best things for my kids too. And so we do everything for our kids, and we say, look, we want to make sure you're in the best schools. We want to make sure you have the clothes. We want to make sure that you're in the right sports and you're on the right team. And before we know it, the kids become the most important thing in our life. And where the order used to be God, my spouse, and then my family, the kids are now in the front. It's the kids. God, you're further down the line. It's probably something else. And then maybe it's my spouse. And then eventually we get down to God, if we're honest. And I've watched that rip families apart. I've watched husbands say, my wife loves the kids more than she loves me. I've watched wives say, my husband loves the kids more than he loves me. It's crazy how it happens. Paul says, look, it's deceitful. Don't be corrupted by deceitful desires. Now, they start off well, but you got to keep it in check. That anything that you worship, that you focus your time and attention on more than God, more than Jesus, that's an idol. And it's going to lead you to some very ugly places. So put that off, he says. Set that aside. Set that old way of thinking and just put it over here. In Romans chapter 12, he says something very similar. He says, look, you can be transformed. You can make your way out. You can have a new way of living Be transformed by the renewing of your, those that know it, by the renewing of your what? Mind. Transform the way you think. He's saying the same thing here to the Ephesians. Think about what it is that you're actually focusing on and where your worship goes, because that will define what you think about yourself. And then it's a vicious cycle. It defines who you are, which leads you back to worship it more, which further defines who you are, which leads you back to worship something that's false over and over. Paul says, look, break it, set it aside. Matter of fact, you know how to do this. And so what I would love to be able to do with you right now, because this is such a core thing, I would love for us to say, hey, let's take a break. We got popcorn, we got lunch out, and then come back, you know, have some lunch, come back, we'll finish today. We can't. So I've got to stop. So we're going to continue this for the next 4 weeks and what it looks like to have a core identity, because there's so much that we could say. We could go really, really deep. So I'm just going to pause a little bit on that. And I think it's great because now you have to come back next week, which is awesome because it's incomplete. But what I want to do for us today is we can't really even go into next week until we answer the question, what is it that I really think about all the time? Where's the object of my focus? Where's my worship? What's my identity? And so here's what I want us to do. I want you to close your eyes. And I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. And I want you to say, the first question I want you to answer is, what is it that I think about myself? When I think about who I am and where I'm going, what do I think about myself? And then, and this one's going to be hard. This next question is really hard. And you need to be honest, because your temptation is going to be to lie and say, no, God, you're the one. But let's be honest here. What do I focus on that matters most to me? What truly matters most to me? And see, this is the opportunity for God and the Holy Spirit to do some work. Because I imagine in this room, there's a lot of us that when we say this, we would love to say, yeah, God, you matter most to me, but somehow that's not true anymore. Something has slipped in the way. Something has moved into that place. And for maybe some of you, it's your marriage. And marriages are great things, and they're wonderful things to focus in on. But you have so focused and so channeled in on what it takes to create a great marriage that you've left God out of it. And you're so focused on building a relationship and doing all these things and pursuing the relationship that, you know, my time with God's just not there. And if you're honest with yourself, you really have become to worship that other person. Maybe for you, and I imagine there's a lot of guys and even ladies in here, that if you were honest, the thing that you think about, where you spend your time and where you spend your attention, is on a career or a job. And that has defined who you are, that I am the VP of sales, I am this engineer, I am whatever it is that you are. And that is what you think about in your career. If you were honest, you think way more about that than you think about God. And it's kind of worked its way up. And it's hard for you to say, but that's the object of my worship. And maybe that's ugly. I hope it's ugly for you to see it. Maybe it's a hobby. You know, maybe it's some sports thing that you're into. And it's like, man, I all I think about is the next time that I can go play that, the next tool that I'm going to buy, the next gadget. Maybe it's just this extreme fascination with working out. And, you know, I want to be fit, and I want to be healthy, and so you're just hyper-focused on what you eat and how you go about it. And if you were honest, you've kind of left God out of the equation there. And so now this is the thing that you worship. Maybe it's the house and all the things that you're looking to the house and all the updates that you want to do. Maybe it's a car. Maybe it's clothes. Maybe it's a vacation. Maybe it's a retirement and a retirement account and where we're going. And where on and on and on it goes. I don't know what it is. What is the thing that you're focused on? That is the object of your worship. That is the thing that's defining you. And if we're going to move forward in anything, in learning to see who God says we are, we have to deal with this thing here. So I want you to think about what it is. And then I want us to pray together. Jesus all across this space. I know having this forefront and centered in our life is just hard. To be faced with the fact that in reality, Jesus, you're no longer number one. And I got these false idols that are in my life and they're defining me and I'm not finding life to the full. So God, first and foremost, before we go any further, I just want to repent. I want to say more than I'm sorry. I want to stop doing this and I want to bring you back. God, show me how I can bring you into my focus, how I can think of you and focus in on you. God, I want my identity to be found in you, not in anything else. So Jesus, forgive us for going out and finding other idols and other things. God, help us as we walk through the next 4 weeks that we would see very clearly how you see us. Help us to come out of this series with a healthy identity of who we are, loved by you, on a mission for you. We pray all that in Jesus' name. Amen.